Patalai Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namani. Namaste Sarasvati Deve Gauravani Pachoni Nivisarasi Sanyavani Paskachyade Satarani. Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Yuta Padakamalam Sri Gurum Vaishnavamscha Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatham Vitams Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Sadvaditam Purjana Sahita Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Vavita Sri Vishakam Vitamscha Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
I'm not so expert using a Mac, so I'm just going to... I'll just get the verse from here. I won't be able to go through. I'll try. So it's May 17, 2009 here in Hilo, and we're doing Upadeshamrita, text 3. At least I have the Sanskrit here. So we could try chanting it again. Is that all right?
Yes.
Everybody together? Utsahan nishchaya darya tat tat karma prabhartanat sangha tyaga sato vritte sadbir bhakti prasiddhati. Dixit principles favorable to the execution of pure devotional service. 1. 2. Endeavoring with confidence. 3. Being patient. 4. Acting according to the regulative principles such as Sravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam. Chanting, remembering Krishna. 5. The association of non devotees. And 6. Steps of the previous acharyas.
These six
principles undoubtedly assure the complete success of pure devotional service. What translation is this?
No, it's from Bhaktivedanta Book Trust.
All right, well, thank you for your effort. It's okay, it's okay. I have enough notes here, I think. But thank you very much. I can't figure out how to... He keeps jumping from page to page. It looks like it's another translation, so I won't be able to find what I was looking for.
Let me see if I can find you another one.
It's okay. It's really okay. I'll manage. All right, we're going to look at... Oh, my. Okay, we go till 7? Okay, because I had figured 10 minutes for each of the 6, but we won't be able to do that. So we're going to look at enthusiasm, endeavoring with confidence, patience, following the footsteps of the previous acharyas, following the regulative principles of bhakti yoga, and abandoning the association of non-devotees. And we know that this 6 ensure the complete success. Anybody here would like complete success in bhakti yoga? Who here would like complete success? You're not sure. You want incomplete success. Anybody here want failure in devotional service?
Yep.
Or incomplete success? Okay, well, you don't have to come to this class then. If any of you want... If you want to be insured, just like you buy insurance, right? You want to be insured. When I was traveling here, they said, do you want traveler's insurance? Or when I was renting a car in Maui, do you want insurance? So if anything bad happens, then they'll take care of you. So this verse, Rupa Goswami is saying, these are the 6 things that will give you insurance, that everything will work out all right. Does that sound good?
Mm-hmm.
The secrets of success. They have all these books, 7 secrets of success, 12 secrets of success. So here Rupa Goswami is giving us the 6 secrets of success. And 3 of them have to do with attitude, and 3 of them have to do with behavior, which is very much related to Rupa Goswami's definition of pure devotional service, anyabhilashita sranyam, jnana kramarvanavritam, anukulena krishnanu shilanam, bhaktir uttama. Shilanam means action, and it means 2 kinds of action: internal mental emotional action and external physical action. And Prabhupada uses this word devotional service. So devotion applies to the mood, and service applies to what you do. If you do service without devotion, then what is it?
Karma.
It's just karma. And if you have devotion without service, what is it?
Fanaticism.
Sentimentality or fanaticism. I mean, you can think in any human relationship, right? Anybody can do service. Just let's say the housewife is washing the dishes. So you can hire a servant to wash the dishes. You pay them. But just because the wife is washing the dishes, the servant is washing the dishes, they don't both have the same relationship with the husband. Although they're both doing the same behavior. And if someone says, yes, I'm your friend, I love you, but anytime you ask them for something, you need something, they're busy with something else, then that's not really devotion. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Devotion is shown in action, but the same actions can be done without devotion. I can wash your dish. I can wash the dishes as a paid person without any devotion, or I can wash them with devotion. So the three that have to do with internal are what?
Enthusiasm, confidence, and patience.
Enthusiasm, confidence, and patience. And the three that have to do with behavior are?
Giving up the association of non-devotees.
Giving up association of non-devotees.
Following the previous
acharyas.
And the last one was?
That was it.
Well, the regular principles of bhakti. Like Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam, which Prabhupada also puts under enthusiasm. Okay? Is that clear?
Yes.
All right. Yeah. Do you want to look first at attitude or first at behavior?
Attitude.
Attitude. All right. So the first thing with attitude is enthusiasm. And Prabhupada says, endeavor executed with intelligence in Krishna consciousness is called enthusiasm. Can we repeat that? Endeavor executed with intelligence in Krishna consciousness. Endeavor executed with intelligence in Krishna consciousness. Endeavor executed with intelligence in Krishna consciousness. So that's what enthusiasm is. Enthusiasm isn't just rah, rah, rah. It's endeavor. It's you do something done with intelligence, thinking of Krishna in Krishna consciousness. So it's not just foolish work, and it's not inactivity, but it is a mood. And it's very interesting, I'm sure all of you know, that Bhaktivinoda Thakur commented extensively on text 2 and 3 of the Upadeshamrita in his book Bhakti Loka. And he talks about enthusiasm as being the essence of spirituality, the essence of being alive. He says if one isn't enthusiastic, then one is just inert. One's just matter. Just like this mat here on the floor. It's incapable of showing any enthusiasm for anything. It doesn't say, sit on me, please. Right? And this is the attitude that one can have when one is offensive in Krishna consciousness also. Oh, I don't want to chant. It's too hard. I don't want to offer my food. It takes too much time. I one time visited a devotee's house who, instead of offering her food, she just had a bottle of maha water that she would spray on the food. And she said, oh, I don't have time to make an offering. So, you know, I don't have time to chant Hare Krishna. I don't have time to make an offering. I don't have time to read the books. I don't have time. I'm inert. I'm just lazy. So this laziness is really a symptom of something that's matter. Again, matter is very lazy. It has this inertia. If you don't push it, it just stays where it is. It doesn't get up and do anything. The flower there and the conch shell, they don't get up and spontaneously do anything. So the less that we're enthusiastic, the more that means that we're identifying with matter. And the more that we're enthusiastic, the more that we're actually identifying as spirit. And Prabhupada, talking about enthusiasm, talks about enthusiastic for what? Enthusiastic for the nine processes. But we'll talk about that more with the regulative principles of bhakti. And Prabhupada says how you can't be successful even in a material endeavor without enthusiasm. So not too long ago, I read the story of a woman who's a champion swimmer in open water. That means like swimming from one Hawaiian island to another.
Oh, the one in the book on the airplane?
I don't know if she was in the book on the airplane. But she might have been. But I read about her a few months ago. And she swam from wasn't the tip of South America, but she swam from quite a distance to Antarctica, for example. She swam between the North and South Islands of New Zealand. I don't know if she swam between any of the Hawaiian Islands. She swam the English Channel. She set all kinds of records swimming in open water. And she especially likes to swim in very cold open water, such as swimming to Antarctica. And for most of us, if we try to swim in the Antarctic Ocean for a short amount of time, we would die of hypothermia. And people don't think about that one of our greatest physiological needs is temperature. We actually need temperature more than we need water, proper temperature. So what did she do? She had this dream that I want to swim to Antarctica. She had this desire. So first of all, she made sure she gained a good deal of weight so that she became like a, you know, the natural creatures, the natural aquatic creatures that have lots of blubber. Big, big lady, but very athletic. And she would sleep with the windows open at night and without any blankets. She would wear very thin clothes and just sandals outside in the winter. And she would swim in colder and colder and colder water every day. She would immerse herself under a doctor's care in water that got progressively colder so she could acclimate her body to this cold water. And she was able to do it. She must have been able to have some sort of meditative process. But she talked about how she would go into a kind of trance and she would keep her internal body temperature high enough in this cold water. And she practiced for years and years and years and years. And for what? They don't even give any money for doing that. I mean, there's nobody out there who'll pay you a salary, you know, for swimming to Antarctica. Just to have your name in the Guinness Book of World Records and so she can give, you know, speeches to people about, you know, go for your dreams and things. But how enthusiastic is this person? She's so enthusiastic. For what? You know, to become a walrus or something in her next life. But she's overwhelmingly enthusiastic. Or, you know, I was just in Maui, and when I was swimming in a pool there, I overheard this man say to his wife, he said, you know, we work much too hard for our money. We really work too hard for our money. He said, but, you know, because we work hard, we have a lot of money. So if you want to come back here to Maui in a few months, he said, you know, this hotel's nothing for us. And it was the pool at the Marriott Hotel, which was like $300 a night. He said, you know, staying here, eating at the restaurants, which is like, $30 per person for a bowl of oatmeal or something like that, somebody told me. He said, you know, this is not a big deal for us. We can come back here every few months. So these people are full of enthusiasm. They're full of enthusiasm. And my dear friends, if people can be that enthusiasm for eating a bowl of oatmeal and swimming on Maui. And, you know, oatmeal really tastes the same whether you eat it in Maui or, you know, Austin, Texas. If they have that much enthusiasm, why can't we have that much enthusiasm for Krishna? I mean, what are we going to find here? Right? Abrahma, Bhuvana, Loka, Punar, Vartin, Arjuna. Wherever you go here, you're going to find just birth, death, old age, and disease. So people are so enthusiastic for this or that, to get their degree, to make a lot of money, to build a beautiful house, to go on vacation, to become a champion, whatever. So why can't we apply that same enthusiasm in devotional service? Actually, Bhaktivinoda Thakur also says that enthusiasm is the life of faith. That faith without enthusiasm is dead. It doesn't mean anything. Now we're going to move on to confidence, because a lot of the reason that people lose their enthusiasm, or as the talker says, their enthusiasm becomes cold, is a lack of confidence. And in fact, the talker defines confidence as faith. I mean, this woman is swimming to Antarctica because she believes it's going to make her happy. She has faith in it. And these people are working hard so they can vacation in Maui because they believe it will make them happy. Everything that people are enthusiastic for is because they have some kind of confidence that if I put my time and energy and thought and care, what did Prabhupada say enthusiasm was? Endeavor executed with intelligence in Krishna consciousness. If I endeavor, that means I do something with intelligence and proper consciousness, what will I get? What will I get? And enthusiastic, well, to be enthusiastic in Krishna consciousness means also patience. I mean, Prabhupada defines patience also as a kind of confidence. He talks about the newly married girl. Now, nowadays, that people probably don't relate to this very well. But in a more natural society, women generally want to have children. They want to have children when they're young. And when they marry, they say, I want to have a baby. You know, and the husband says, well, you know, it's going to take at least 9 months. It might take even a little longer. So it's not that on your wedding day, poof, you're going to have a baby. Again, I think in modern society, people don't relate to this very well. They want to wait to get married till they're, you know, 45 and whatever. You're not...
I have a question. You're not a Christmas
thing. Okay, go ahead, Vicky.
Carla says she wants $9 and one
size. Okay, very nice. So we still have... I don't know if she'll still feel that way when she's 16 or 20. Anyway, Prabhupada gives this example. That if you say, I want a baby, I want a baby, I want a baby, it takes time. One has to wait at least 9 months to get a baby. And what to speak of practically anything is like that. If someone says, I want a college degree, it's not like, you know, okay, you just go and get one overnight. You have to go through the procedures. Or if someone wants to become like this woman, you know, it took her so many years to build up her body and build up her psychology in order to make that swim. So if you want something that's worthwhile, generally you have to be patient. Now, the Thakur also talks about patience in terms of vacho vegam, manasa krodha vegam, jiva vegam, udara pasta vegam. That vegam means control of the senses. And both Srila Prabhupada and Bhaktivinoda Thakur talk about patience means that you're depending on Krishna's mercy. You don't think, I can do this on my own. You know, maybe someone who's trying to swim the English Channel or someone who's trying to earn enough to vacation in Maui 5 times a year thinks, I'm the doer. Ahankara vimudhatma kartaham iti manyate. I'm the doer by my endeavor. But this patience is not by my endeavor. It's waiting for Krishna. So many times Srila Prabhupada will say that one should be determined that in this life I'm going to become Krishna conscious. But really, my friends, is that up to us entirely? No, it's not. So you find like Rukmini Devi, when she's writing the letter to Krishna, she said, my dear Krishna, if you won't accept me, this life is your wife. I am prepared to undergo austerities life after life after life. Janmani and Janmani Ishvare, Bhavatad Bhakti Ahoituki Twaya. My dear Lord, I am determined that in this life, I am going to become Krishna conscious, but I await your mercy. And if you don't give me mercy in this life, my dear Lord, that's up to you. I am going to be patient. I met this one devotee in Australia who'd stopped practicing Krishna consciousness, and he said, for 10 years, I went out on the streets playing mridanga with a shaved head. Isn't that sincerity? For 10 years, I chanted 16 rounds. Isn't that sincerity? Where's my bliss? Where's my bhakti? So Krishna doesn't like being dealt with like that. You know, I put my dollar in the machine, I punch the right buttons, where's my can of soda? He doesn't reciprocate with that. So patience also means dependent on Krishna. But patience can mean controlling the senses. Now, we're Ananda Maya Vyasat. We're pleasure-seeking entities. And if I control my senses, if I only talk about Krishna, I only think about Krishna, I don't engage in intoxication, illicit sex, meat eating, gambling, I'm not watching television, I'm not doing all the things. I'm not, they say never try to compete with a baby. I'm not doing all the things that materialists think are going to be the source of their pleasure. And if I haven't yet really been swimming in the ocean of love of God, maybe I get a little whiff of it now and then from a great distance. How long can one live without pleasure? That was Arjuna's fear. He said, if I take up this process, I'll be a riven cloud. I may fail spiritually, and in the meantime, I'll have given up all my material pleasure, so I'll have nothing. So this enthusiasm, confidence, and patience are very intertwined. Because I have to be enthusiastic to control my senses. I have to be enthusiastic to forego material sense gratification. I can only do that if I'm confident that by doing that I'm going to get a far greater pleasure. Otherwise, it's impossible. I mean, ordinary person gives up a lot of material pleasure to get a college degree. Right? Does anybody here enjoy studying for exams? Would anyone choose to do that? One person. Okay, one person.
Maybe one person in high school.
One person like that. All right, but most people would not choose to do that. I mean, I love to read and I love to study. But I don't like the rigors of school. I'd rather study in another way. I don't want to listen to a boring professor. I used to sit in school thinking, if only I could expand myself and another part of me could, like, go to the beach. So when you're going to school, you're foregoing immediate pleasure. You're controlling your senses. You're doing austerity because you're thinking, once I get my degree, I'll get a greater quality of pleasure. I'll get a greater quality of enjoyment. That's why people work at a job. Even if you love your job, you don't love every aspect of your job. Who can say, I love every single thing I do at my job? And it's not necessarily that if you had a choice, if you could be independently wealthy without working, would you work at your job?
No.
Probably not. So that means you're sacrificing the pleasure you'd like to do to work at your job so you can get money and have a greater pleasure than being a homeless bum on the street. That means there's some confidence that if I work at my job, I will get a higher pleasure than if I don't work. If I get my degree, there's a higher pleasure than if I don't get my degree. Right? Or marriage, that takes a lot of work. There's a lot of sacrifice. There's a lot of sense control. But a person's thinking, I'll be happier by being married than being single. Or just, you know, having so many boyfriends or girlfriends. It'll be a higher pleasure. My point is, without that confidence, without that faith, you cannot be both patient and enthusiastic. You just can't. You'll say, I want pleasure now. Why should I sacrifice the now pleasure for something that I may not get? So one has to be sure, yes, I will get that pleasure. And as we see, as one's faith deepens, then one can easily give up material things more and more. The catch is, without giving up material things, I don't have the adhikar to develop firm faith. It sort of has to build on itself. You know, in the beginning, you have some enthusiasm. You think, all right, let me try this. You get some taste of spiritual happiness, which gives you some confidence, so you become a little patient. Then again, you experience some taste. I heard one devotee explain it, and I don't know if it's a good analogy here in Hawaii, like ice skating. I hope all of you have sometime in your life seen ice in the winter. So the pond freezes over, and you're not sure if it'll hold you. So first you put like your toe on the water. You know, you throw a stick on the water, and you kind of stay at the edge, and you gradually test it, and as it holds you, then after a while you put on your ice skates and you go skating. So one gradually develops this confidence and this faith. And if we have firm faith, then we can be both enthusiastic and patient. The Bhaktivinoda Thakur talks about this faith, and he says that it is impossible to have this faith simply by virtue of our sense perception, because we're trying to have faith in something that's beyond our sense perception. Therefore, we must get this faith from Guru and Shastra. It's the only place to get it. And he talks about then the 9 principles of faith that one gets from Guru and Shastra. So the first principles, you get faith from Guru and Shastra, and what are the 9 principles of faith you get from Guru and Shastra? Does anybody know?
This is in the Bhakti Lokya.
This is in Bhakti Lokya. It's also in a number of other places. It's basically the Dasamula, the 10 truths, the 10 things one has to have faith in order to be enthusiastic and confident. And the first one is that all authority comes from Shastra. Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That the ultimate absolute truth is a person, Hari.
He possesses all energy in the embodiment of Rasa.
Yes, you got 2 of them. So Krishna has all energies, all inconceivable energies, and that he's all powerful, and also that he has all rasa, that he has all sweetness, that he has all relationships. Any more?
Abhimansa tattva, he has jivas.
The jivas, yes. Oh, we have a scholar. So there's that the jivas are part of Krishna, and then there are 2 categories of jivas.
Mukta and vimukta.
Yes, the jivas who have... And he explains in Bhakti Loka as the jivas who want to make Krishna happy and the jivas who want to make themselves happy. Of course, when you try to make yourself happy, it doesn't work. As Prabhupada told my father in 1976, he said, if you eat good food, you'll have good eyesight, but if you put the food in your eyes, you'll become blind. So always get this picture of someone sticking carrots in their eyes, you know. So as soon as you endeavor for your own happiness, then you lose it. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur says in Bhakti Loka, one may question how any pure soul could be interested in their own happiness instead of Krishna's happiness. He says this can be understood by the fact... This can be understood by the fact that in material world there's past, present, and future, but in the spiritual world there's only the eternal present. He said, when we understand that time works differently in reality, then we no longer think of some causative event. When did this happen? When did the jiva make this decision in time? No longer comes into play. Okay, other things? That there's a chinchabeda beta tattva, that everything's simultaneously, inconceivably one and different from Krishna. Now, all those that we've discussed so far deal with sambandha, with relationship. The relationship between me and Krishna, the relationship between me and the other jivas, the relationship between me and the world, the relationship of the world to Krishna. And then there's, of course, abhideya and prayojana. And the dasamulu that deals with abhideya says that only pure bhakti will give you success. And with prayojana, that success is praying. So one must have faith in these things, that the ultimate goal of life is love of God. And most religions think that the ultimate goal is sense gratification in heaven or
liberation.
If you go to most places of religion, they'll tell you the goal is salvation or the goal is heaven. That's the goal they're putting up. They're not really putting up this goal is selfless love for God. Now, if I know that that's the goal and I know that bhakti is the means and I understand who I am, I will be enthusiastic and patient. Now, you can say, well, I know many people who accept this philosophy and they're not enthusiastic and patient. It's accepting it in your heart, not just accepting it as something theoretical. If I really believe that I am a soul and I really believe that I am an eternal servant of Krishna, I have an eternal relationship with Krishna, and the ultimate goal of life is prema, and that staying in this world of samsara is suffering, and that I can achieve prema by pure bhakti, then I will do it. Now let's go on to behavior. So what exactly will I do? So now I have faith, I have enthusiasm, and I have patience. What will I do? Well, I'll follow the regulative principles of bhakti, which Prabhupada talks about in terms of the nine processes. Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam, Archanam, Dasyam, Sakyam, Atmanivedanam. Probably which one of them. Padasevanam, did I say Padasevanam? Shravanam, Kirtanam, Smaranam, Vandanam, Padasevanam, Vasare, Pujana, Sakijana, Atmanivedanam, Pujana. So these can also be divided up into the 64 limbs of bhakti. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur talks about the 64 items that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught to Rupa and Sanatana Goswami, and that Rupa Goswami then delineated in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Of the 64 items, what are the three most important?
Everything relating to Guru.
Everything relating to Guru. Accepting a Guru, serving the Guru, and taking diksha from the Guru. Those are the three most important. Because without a God, we can't do anything. You know, you're lost. Like I just was on Maui for the first time, and I thought, I rented a car, and my son had told me to get a GPS. And I thought, oh, I won't spend the $10 a day on this GPS. So after my first trek, I met up with him, and he said, Mata, just get the GPS. So that was my little guru. Right? At least you have to have a map. You have to have some guide. You know, turn left here, go here. Otherwise, you're wandering. Even though it was a small island, I would still be wandering on Maui, not getting to my destination. What to speak of the upside-down banyan tree of the material world? I mean, I'm sure that Maui, being a rather small island with only a few roads, that if I stayed there for maybe a year without a guru, I probably could figure it out. I'd use a lot of gas, or I'd do a lot of walking. You know, but trying to figure out the upside-down banyan tree without a guru, it's impossible. One will never be able to get anywhere. So those are the three most important. And what are the five most potent? It says even a neophyte, by a little touch of these things, can attain the goal of life.
Residence in Mathura. Hearing and chanting about the Srimad Bhagavatam.
The Srimad Bhagavatam or Shastra, yeah? Archana, deity worship? Sadhu Sangha and? Madhuravas we got? And Harinam.
Harinam.
And of course, Harinam permeates all of them. You can't do Archanam without mantra. When you associate with devotees, you're supposed to, Majjhita Madgata Parnam Purayantas Purasparam. Okay? You're supposed to be talking about Krishna, not just associating with devotees and saying, oh, who got married? Who had a baby? Who got the latest football scores? when one lives in a holy place, naturally you're in Mathura and everybody is saying, Jai Radhe, Jai Radhe. And when you're reading the Srimad Bhagavatam, there's all Krishna's names. So naturally all those are pervaded by chanting Hare Krishna. And Prabhupada says, one has to become thoroughly callous to non-permanent activities and turn his attention instead to the regulative principles of bhakti. He also says that neglect of these will destroy bhakti. If one says, oh, I don't have any time to chant, I don't have any time to hear, I don't have any time to worship the deity, then one's mood will never develop. So the behavior is both a symptom of the mood. If I love you, I do something. Now, someone was talking to me the other day about finding a man who's good husband material. So, you know, pretty funny. Not too many of them. Huh? So there's many men who'll say, I love you, dear. I love you, dear. I love you, dear. Oh, very nice. Will you maintain me? No, I just want to sit on the couch all day watching television. Right? So where's the love? So love is demonstrated by action. The internal mood is demonstrated by action, but also the external actions nourish the mood. If I want to develop a relationship with you, I have to do something for you. Doing something for you brings out that mood of love. So therefore, if one doesn't do anything for Krishna, that mood will never develop. First of all, it's meaningless to say I have a mood if I don't do anything, and second of all, if I don't do anything, the mood will die. It won't blossom. I mean, again, this is true even in ordinary relationships. One of my friends said, it's very difficult. So many of my devotee friends live so far from me. How do I maintain that relationship if I never do anything with them? And indeed, it's difficult. If I never write you, I never call you, I never go anywhere with you, I never think about you, I never talk to you, how will our relationship develop? So we must engage in these, and they're easy to engage. They're not difficult things to engage in. Thinking about Krishna, reading about Krishna, serving Krishna. These are not difficult or painful things to do. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur also says that we should do these according to Shastra, not invented things. A Prabhupada, in talking about enthusiasm, also says that what we do in devotional service is not narrow or stereotype, because he's quoting from the 9th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Maya tathamidam sarvam jagadavyaktimurtina matstani sarvabhutani nachaham te svastitaha. Krishna is everything. Therefore, practically speaking, almost anything. I mean, anything except, you know, butcher shops and liquor stores and gambling casinos and strip clubs. But pretty much anything. You can engage in Krishna's service. Whatever you like to do. It's not that you just have to live in some brahmachari ashram and go out singing and dancing on the streets all day in order to be following the principles of devotional service. Prabhupada said it's not stereotyped. It's not narrow. Whatever we're doing, we do it for Krishna. Dovetail it with Krishna. It's really so easy. Since Krishna is everything, Krishna is everywhere, that I can easily take whatever my desires, whatever my propensities, whatever my talents are, and I can dovetail them with Krishna consciousness. And that's, of course, a symptom of love. Then following in the footsteps of the previous acharyas, so Bhaktivinoda Thakur talks about this in terms of the grihasthas and the renunciates. And he speaks about it in terms of the good qualities that are delineated in the Bhagavad Gita, especially 16th chapter, where Krishna gives the qualities of the divine nature. And Prabhupada in that purport delineates them by varna and ashrama. And the Thakur says that following in the footsteps of the previous acharyas, saduvrite, means that one engages according to varna ashrama. And this very basic principle is that I decide, and this is somewhat according to age, when we're looking at the ashrams, let's look first at the ashrams, I decide, mostly it's according to my age, to what I consider to be pleasurable. We were just reading in New Zealand about how Daksha cursed Narada Muni to have no home. And for Daksha, having no home would be hellish. And for Narada, having no home is a benediction. I was just reading in Radhanath Maharaj's biography how on his first day in India, some gentlemen were eating something that he thought was red candy, and they offered him one, and so when he ate it, he found that it was a super hot chili. And he'd never in his life eaten chili before, and he tried to douse it with water, which of course made it worse. And he was thinking, one man's food is another man's poison. So you decide, what do you consider pleasurable? Do you consider studying pleasurable? Do you consider having a family pleasurable? Do you consider not having a family pleasurable? And then you take the sacrifices that go along with that pleasure. Just like if you want to enjoy having a home, you think, okay, I have some security, I have some place to keep my things, I have some shelter. That you think of that pleasure as like half of the equation, then the other half is you have to pay the rent or the mortgage, you have to take care of the plumbing, you have to clean it. Does that make sense? If you say, I want the pleasure of the association with the opposite sex, then you have to marry them and have children with them, and you have to put up with their peculiarities. Men seem rather peculiar to women, and women seem rather peculiar to men. Right? You have to tolerate that and work together. If you want the pleasure of studying, then you have to take the austerity of taking exams. Right? Being under the care of a teacher. If you want the pleasure of not having a home, then you have the austerity of not being able to accumulate a lot of things and not having any place that you can control where you keep your things. If you want the pleasure of having a lot of money, then you have to take the austerity of having a job. If you want the pleasure of not having a job, then you have the austerity of just, well, whatever money Krishna sends. And then you decide which of those you like and you choose your ashram accordingly. What people try to do in the modern age is they say, well, I like the freedom of the renounced ashram and I like the sense gratification of the grihastha ashram, so I'm going to mix and match. And therefore we find so-called renunciates who have big bank accounts and fancy homes and who are always flirting with the opposite sex, or having some emotional relationship with the opposite sex. You see that, you know, so-called renunciates who are women, they'll develop some emotional dependency on some man, or so-called renunciates who are men, they'll be flirting with women. Or then you have grihasthas who say, well, yes, I want money and I want the opposite sex, but it's so much trouble. So you'll see these grihasthas who are always there leaving their wife and they're going to holy places 9 months out of the year and that kind of thing. Or one thing the Thakur talks about in this regard is having an honest livelihood. You know, and you find people who just want to make their living by scamming, you know, right? You find this everywhere. So this is not sadhuvrite. This is not following in the footsteps of the previous acharyas. Following in the footsteps of the previous acharyas means basically to be honest, to say, this is the way I want to enjoy what is the commensurate sacrifice as given in the shastras. And then he also talks about what are the requirements for your ashram, such as the grihasthas, giving in charity, providing hospitality for guests, and then developing all of the good qualities of the devotees. Now that's, of course, on the material platform. On the spiritual platform, sadhuvrite means, the Thakur says, constant chanting. Worshipping Tulsi, worshipping the deity, and always chanting the holy name of the Lord. Now the last thing we're going to look at is abandoning the association of non-devotees. So in thinking about this, Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati says, who is the non-devotee that we live with? Our own mind. Right? Our own mind. So therefore, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in speaking about abandoning the association, Sangha Tyaga is actually the words that Rupa Goswami uses. Sangha Tyaga. He talks about this in two respects, association and attachment. So I'm going to look first at attachment. He says, give up attachment to possessions. Just like I remember Nitya telling me that when her mother was leaving her body, she said, you know, I'm even attached to my car. Didn't she say that? Something like that? Maybe it was mom. What did your mother say that she was found that she was attached to? Something like that. Some possession. Maybe, I think it was a year or two before she died when she first found out she was sick. Do you remember what that was? Anyway, she told me that when she was in North Carolina. She said, I realized when I was dying that I had attachment even to these things. You know, we may have attachment to ridiculous things, like a particular pair of socks, right? A particular car, a particular this, a particular that. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, the devotee should accept whatever Krishna gives and whatever Krishna takes, then they're also happy with that. I was just also reading, Radhana Swami said that when he went, before he joined the Hare Krishna movement, before he met Prabhupada, that he was meditating up in the Himalayas on a rock in the middle of the Ganges. And he took a vow that for 1 month he would only take as his sustenance Ganges water and one carrot a day. So he did that for every month, for every day during the month while he was meditating on this rock in the Ganges. So at the end of his vow, he had 1 rupee that some local sadhu had given him. And he thought, I'm going to use this rupee and buy peanuts and break my fast. So he goes to a shop and he hands the man a rupee, which in those days was worth about 12 cents. And this man makes a newspaper cup and fills it with peanuts. And he's thinking, oh, I'm finally going to get to enjoy. And as he's walking with his peanuts, what are there in India?
Monkeys.
Monkeys. And this huge monkey jumps and grabs the container of peanuts away from him and jumps up into a tree. And then he notices there's some peanuts that fell on the ground. I'll get those. And then another monkey comes and gets all the peanuts from the ground. And he had nothing. And this is exactly the scenario Bhaktivinoda Thakur is describing. You know, one day we have something, one day we don't have something. And to be equipoise. Krishna gives, Krishna takes away. As Prabhupada says, that his father used to tell him, Krishna has 10 hands, and if he wants to give, he'll give you so much, you can't even hold it. And I think we all had experiences in our lives when Krishna gave us so much that we just were overwhelmed. And he says, and if he wants to take it away, you can't hold on with your 2 hands. Right? And I think we've also all had these experiences when Krishna takes away with his 10 hands and then you're just, there's nothing you can do. So as it says in the Bible, the Lord gives and the Lord takes away. Blessed be the holy name of the Lord. So that is also this mood of sangha tyaga. Give up this attachment to having things, whatever it may be. Whatever Krishna gives, I accept. Whatever Krishna takes away, I accept. And the other kind of sangha, the other kind of attachment sangha one should give up is to our karma and gyan. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur said this is being proud of our karma and gyan. I'm proud of what I know. And all of us know something. We all know how to, I don't know, fix a car, play a computer game, comb our hair, style hair, I don't know. Everybody here know something? Everybody here, what do you know how to do?
Breathe.
Breathe, you know how to do more than that. You know how to play chess. And we all know how to do something. So we're proud of our knowledge. I'm the master of this thing. And we're also proud of our qualities. I was just recently reading an essay Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati wrote of how when he went before his guru, Gorkeshwar Das Babaji, he could see that this pride in his goodness was just worthless. I am a good person. I have so many good qualities. I do this good thing. I do that good thing. So to give up our attachment to this. This is basically sarvupadi vinirmuktam. All this upadis. I am a this kind of person. I am a that kind of person. Then the other kind of sangha tyaga is to give up association. And the Thakur says 2 kinds of association. Those who don't want to depend on Krishna. And how did he put it? He said... Those who think, I don't need Krishna. I can do everything without Krishna. I'm the doer. And then the other kind of association he said to give up, oh, can anyone guess? Said people who don't want to depend on Krishna and?
People that are overly attached to their senses.
Yes, and what people are those, did he say, do you think?
Lusty people.
And what did he say those people were? Women.
And
he said... But he said specifically to give up attachment to women. And he said, now the householder should give up attachment to women by 1, not lusting after others' wives, and 2, seeing his wife as a partner in Krishna consciousness. Not being under the control of his wife. Not being, what did he call it? Uxorious about his wife. Not being a dancing dog in the hands of his wife. He said, then the householder is not associating with women. And he said, for women... If they get together with other women and talk about Krishna, that's also not associating with women. So I understood that this associating with women means that basically this material world is epitomized as Mayadevi. So this idea of wanting to enjoy the world, which is epitomized by the womanly form. And if you don't believe that enjoying the world is epitomized by the womanly form, then just look at advertisements. Right? If any company wants to say, this product will make you a worldly success, what do? They have some attractive, scantily dressed woman. Or they'll show a man and woman enjoying
they
together.
Also have scantily dressed men now.
Nowadays. But they know that scantily dressed men are probably not going to sell as many products. So they may throw that in there just for political correctness, but they're going to make sure that they have like a man and a woman together, or sometimes a man with two women, or three or four. That's very common. And especially for like cigarettes and alcohol. Or when we used to do this logic class, so I have several of my former students in here, we would go through advertisements. Do you remember that? And see how they were using different techniques. So I always remember one of them for cigarettes. It was showing a man and a woman on a motorcycle together, and then another man standing here, and the woman is looking away from her husband or boyfriend or whatever toward the other man who's smoking the cigarette. You know, you want to capture another man's woman, then just smoke this cigarette. But they basically use the womanly form basically is the symbol of material enjoyment and opulence. So not to associate with this concept that I am going to enjoy the world. And Prabhupada said that the ISKCON centers are especially meant for this purpose of giving up worldly association and following the footsteps of the previous acharyas. That, in other words, that's why we have this sangha of devotees. That's why we get together. That's why we form a society, why we don't all just try to practice Krishna consciousness in a Himalayan cave. So that we can engage in the positive aspects of devotional service. And because we're social creatures, just like in New Zealand where I've just been staying, they rent out the land to some, well, they rent it out to the owner of some lamas. They don't rent it out to the lamas directly. But they have mostly female lamas and babies. And there's one male lama, and the poor male lama is not allowed to be in the pasture ground with the female lamas and the babies. He has to be segregated, poor guy. And he's in a pasture with some cows and oxen. And you see this, they're very social creatures, and you'll see him, he walks over to the fence, and he's looking over at the lamas, over at the other lamas, and I'm sure he's thinking, why aren't I allowed to go over there? Just because I'm a boy, I've got to stand over here by myself. So we also, as human beings, we're social creatures. And if we don't make friends with the devotees, then naturally we're going to make friends with sense enjoyers. It really can't be helped. It's interesting that in talking about Sangha Tyaga, in talking about giving up both materialistic association and giving up our material attachments, the Thakur says that one of the ways to do this is by occasionally denying the needs of the body. And he said there are two needs of the body, one for sense gratification and one that's life-sustaining. And he said occasionally one should even deny the life-sustaining aspects of the body, such as food and water and sleep on codices. Of course, that depends upon one's health. Not everybody can do that. But if one's capable of doing that, that will help to break this Sangha Tyaga. So again, these six things, they what? What was the translation? They completely?
Success.
They assure the complete success of pure devotional service. So this is the insurance. It assures it. It's guaranteed that if we do these six things, if we're enthusiastic, which means what was enthusiasm defined as? Endeavor executed with intelligence and Krishna consciousness. If we're also patient, we're also patient, enthusiastic, I want to be Krishna conscious in this life, and patient, Janme Prabhu, say however many lives it takes, I'm not going to give up. I'm not going to say, oh, it's so hard, I can't do it, I'll never make it. And that in order to have that enthusiasm and patience, one must have
confidence.
It's assured. And then what do you practically do? The 64 items of devotional service, or the 9 main areas of devotional service. You live an honest life, according to one's varna and ashrama, according to one's material propensities. And you give up our association with the enjoying mentality. And if one does that, then success is assured. Success is assured. It may come today, it may come tomorrow. You know, it may not come for another, as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said to Mukunda, what was it, 10,000 verse, 10 million verse? But Mukunda was so happy when he heard, I'll get it eventually. Yes, I will achieve success someday. And as I was saying, Rukmini Devi says, I will do austerities life after life after life. I will never give up my enthusiasm and patient execution of the processes of devotional service. So, simple.
Did you mention the previous acharyas?
Yes, well, Saduvrite, as we were talking in Saduvrite, as Prabhupada talks about following the footsteps of the previous acharyas. So how do they execute devotional service? So we could explain that. There's different, I'm running out of time. Or can I go on? Or okay. So that, I like what you said, Chandrika Prabhu, because that's another way of looking at it. The way Bhaktivinoda Thakur was looking at it was in terms of one live one's life according to the sadhus and the shastra. You live the life of a sadhu. You be a sadhu. Another way to look at it is you could say, well, how exactly do I do these 64 items of devotional service? How exactly do I do this Shravanam Kirtanam? What exactly do I do? How do I do it? And you see, how do the acharyas do it? What do they do? They rise early in the morning. They chant a certain number of rounds on beads. They worship the deity in this particular manner. You follow in their footsteps. So you could look at following the regulative principles of bhakti yoga is sort of a general thing, and then how you institute it is by the acharyas.
Yeah, their lives are so enlivening, and their examples are
Are very exciting and enlivening.
Then you get more encouragement
to practice it. And throughout this whole discussion in Bhakti Loka, Bhaktivinoda Thakur emphasizes that all of these things are done by the mercy and association of the devotees. That none of these things, as soon as one is thinking, you know, enthusiasm is just a matter of willpower, like that lady who swims to Antarctica, then you're finished. You know, willpower is there, undoubtedly. But one also has to get mercy. And then there's that play of willpower and mercy, like the sparrow and Garuda. How does a sparrow attract the mercy of Garuda? By trying to do the impossible. Is it possible for us to attain Krishna prema by our own endeavor?
No.
Impossible. Impossible. Is it possible for the sparrow to drink the ocean?
No.
But she doesn't just sit back and say, you know, it's impossible. I'm going to sit here and wait for Garuda. What does she do? She says, you know, I know it's impossible, but I'm going to sip that ocean water forever. I'm never going to stop. I'm never going to give up. I'm never going to get tired. And Garuda says, wow. Like as soon as Mukunda said, oh, I get to see Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in 10 million births, then he said, okay, come immediately. And actually, I was just reading where Prabhupada said that as soon as one thinks, I must attain Krishna Prem in this life immediately, I must attain Krishna Prem in this life, then immediately Krishna will be there. As soon as one has that degree of enthusiasm, then immediately Krishna will reciprocate. So it's this sort of dance between our will and that mercy. But as soon as someone thinks it's just mercy, I won't do anything, or it's just my willpower, I'm the doer, then there's no progress. Any other questions or comments or additions, subtractions? Yes. If you do the internal, will the external naturally follow? It can work both ways. If you think of, Prabhupada talks about thinking, feeling, and willing. And if you think, if I had a little board, if you can imagine, can you all imagine I have a whiteboard here?
Yes.
All right, on my whiteboard, I've drawn a circle, and I've cut the circle into thirds. And in one third, I've written thinking, another feeling, another willing. So we have our thoughts, our emotions, and our behaviors. Now, they're very intertwined. It's very difficult to have behaviors that are very, very different from your thoughts and emotions for a long period of time, or vice versa. We tend to move towards integration. You know, sustained hypocrisy is difficult. It's really quite difficult. You know, if I'm doing, as Prabhupada was asked actually right here in Hawaii, but it was a very politically motivated question, and some devotees asked Prabhupada, you know, is it faster to make advancement if you live in the temple? Prabhupada said, that depends if your mind is on another subject matter. So if I'm offering artik to the deities, and all I'm thinking about is, oh, that's a pretty brahmacharini out there. You know, or if I'm offering artik to deities, and I'm thinking, you know, oh, boy, I'd like to be rich and famous and etc. Then eventually I'll probably stop offering artik to the deities, or eventually my mind will start paying attention to what I'm doing. So if my body and mind are not in sync, eventually my body will follow my mind, or my mind will follow my body. It's very hard to stay unintegrated over a long period of time. Now, which way that goes depends on you. But we should try to be an integrated person. We should, if we're doing the activities, if our problem is that I'm doing the activities of devotional service but my mind is elsewhere, I should try to put my mind on what I'm doing. Prabhupada wrote that in a letter to Jayapataka Swami. That surrender to Krishna means that you take great care in every detail of what you're doing at every moment, no matter what it is. And if your problem is that you have the feeling but you're not doing anything, that reminds me of one friend of mine who said, yeah, my heart's at Mangal Artik. And his friend said, well, why don't you bring the rest of you? So, you know, if each of us tend to have a problem in a different area. Some of us are really good at the externals, but our mind is in, you know, who knows, Patalaloka or Swargaloka, depending on our modes of nature. So then keep trying to bring the mind back. And for some of us, you know, we love Krishna, and we think we really like Krishna consciousness, and we really like devotional service. We're attached to our spiritual master, but we're not doing anything. You know, maybe we're doing something a little bit sometimes. So then we have to work on, all right, well, if I have this feeling for Guru and Krishna, maybe I should show it some way. So to try to become an integrated whole. Because, again, we're going to tend towards integration. So if we don't make an endeavor to integrate, we'll naturally tend to integrate one way or the other. Our body will naturally tend to follow our mind, or our mind naturally tend to follow our body. But to make some endeavor like that. Otherwise, you don't know which way it'll go, you know. That also depends on our association. If I have really, really good association, then I'm going to tend to go toward that part of me that's good. And if I have bad association, I'm going to tend to go toward that part of me that's bad. So if I desire to become integrated, let me associate with people who are at least more integrated than I am. And they'll push me in that direction.
Otherwise, you might disintegrate.
No, you'll end up integrating one way or the other. You'll end up integrating one way or the other. If you're allowing your mind to think of nonsense while you're externally doing devotional service and not making any endeavor to integrate your mind with your behavior, eventually your behavior will follow your mind. Yes?
I heard the analogy another way. Instead of having it split into three ways,
mm-hmm.
three layers. And whichever layer is the one you're paying attention to, that's the one that's going to become the brightest and eventually conquer the other layers.
And the others will follow.
So you have, you know, like three sheets of cloth together. And whichever sheet of cloth is the one that's actually, you pay attention to working with, that'll dominate the other ones until it's one big cloth. And the other ones will become just part of that.
Just part of that.
So whatever one you're working on with effort, that's what you're going to get eventually.
Well, yeah, there's that old story that there's two dogs fighting, you know, in the mind. You ever heard that story? So there was a little boy who was insulted by his friends, and he went to his grandfather, and he said, Grandpa, I want to go to that boy who insulted me and punch them. And the grandpa said, yeah, sometimes I want to punch people, and sometimes I want to forgive them, and I feel like the punching dog and the forgiving dog are fighting it out in my mind. And the little boy said, which one wins? He said, depends which one I feed. So it depends what you're paying attention to. So yeah, if your mind is all over the universe, but you're doing devotional service externally with your body, and you pay attention to what your body is doing, then your mind will be paying attention to what your body is doing, and then your mind will come into sync with your body. And yeah, if your mind's all over the place and you're externally doing devotional service and you give more attention to your mind going there, then eventually you go there. Thank you. Anything else? Yes.
Sometimes there's the emphasis of engaging people properly versus simply trying to get a stiff upper lip and willing your way through it. What's the balance of, you know, a brahmacharya actually just getting married, for example?
People should be engaged according to their nature. So the example's given of Gajendra and the crocodile. Like Gajendra's fighting the crocodile in the water. And Prabhupada said the crocodile, being a creature of the water, could eat. Now, I'm not quite sure how he did that, because he had his mouth around Gajendra's foot. So it's kind of hard to eat when you've got an elephant's leg in your mouth. But somehow he was managing to eat. By the way, Prabhupada said that because he was touching, that because the crocodile was touching the feet of a devotee, therefore he also got liberated from that crocodile body. So if you, and at that time, Gajendra was a neophyte. So if you bite the feet of a neophyte devotee, you'll get benedictions. Better to serve the feet of an advanced devotee. But Gajendra being in the water, the elephant being in the water, he couldn't eat. So he's fighting and fighting and fighting, but he couldn't get any food. And therefore he became weaker. So one has to know what is one's food. We're all fighting against Maya, and you have to eat. Soldiers have to eat. There's no use having an army without cooks. How long can you fight without food? You can't do it. You have to eat. So deciding where to go in the varnas and ashramas are according to what your food is. Like I was saying, one man's food is another man's poison. Some people, they hear these guys popping chili peppers like candy, you know. So to one person, having a house is the story we're talking about with Daksha and Narada. For Daksha, having a house was his food. For Narada, not having a house was his food. For some people, the association of the opposite sex is their food. For some people, not having the association of the opposite sex is their food. You have to see, what is my food? If you try to eat someone else's food, you just become ill. But the thing is, you've got to perform the sacrifice that goes with your food. You know, growing tomatoes is a little bit different than growing wheat or growing blueberries. The kind of fertilizer you put in is a little different. So you decide, what is my food? In what environment will I be strong to fight Maya? And then you have to be willing to pay that price. As I say, a lot of people today, they try to mix and match. They say, I want the food of the renounced ashram, and I want the food of the grihastha ashram, and I don't want to pay the price of either. That's called stealing. Right? Each has their price, and the price and the enjoyment are two sides of exactly the same thing. Just like in the grihastha ashram, you can say one of the sacrifices of being a grihastha is you have to give charity. But charity is also very pleasurable. It's a very, very pleasurable feeling to give in charity. So you pay the price and you get the pleasure. It's a very pleasurable feeling to depend on Krishna for your income and not have a job. But that's also an austerity. You don't know where your money's going to come from or how much you're going to get. So the pleasure and the austerity are two different ways of looking at the same. It depends how you look at it. A renunciate looks at children as an austerity. A grihastha looks at children primarily as a pleasure. You know, Daksha looked at being homeless as an austerity, and Narada looked at being homeless as a pleasure. So how do you, which side of the coin are you looking at? That tells you what ashram you belong in. If you see that having my own bank account and having a steady income is a pleasure, you belong in the grihastha ashram. If you see that as an austerity, you belong in the renounced ashram. But then take what goes with it. And artificiality, I mean, Raghunath Das Goswami in Manushiksha said the most dangerous thing is deceit. Krishna doesn't like deceit. He doesn't buy in anyway. He knows what's going on. That's not helpful. Another way you can look at it is, if I want to get, you know, from here to Murari's house, I have to know where I am. Otherwise, how do I know whether I turn left or right? So whether you turn left or right depends on where you are. I can't say turning right is better. Better for whom? To say the renounced ashrams are better, but where are you on the map? If you say turning right is better, but where you are on the map, turning right will get you into the Pacific Ocean, then it's not better. So you have to be honest. What's my pleasure? What do I take pleasure in? What do I consider enjoyable? And that tells you which ashram and which varna you go in. And the fastest way for each of us depends on where we are. Right? How do I get to your place? Where are you starting from? Is the next question. So it doesn't even make any sense. And people who try, who say, well, turning left is better, or turning right is better, you know, without consideration of their own position, they end up in the ocean with their stiff upper lip. And then they're spending their time swimming back to shore, whereas the person who's honest about their position gets to their destination. Honesty is we could say the whole key to sadhavritti is honesty. Being completely honest is very difficult. It's like the student who turns in a paper that someone else wrote. You know, we have a cheating propensity, and we all have a tendency to want to position ourselves as being further along the road than we are. But then you can't know which way to go.
That's another reason why
you need a guru.
Sangha,
you need a guru.
Because the guru is expert in understanding the relationship.
And you need to be submissive to the guru. You know, so many people have a guru as a fashion. Oh, here's my guru, Dave. Do you follow his instructions? Well, Jaya Guru Deva, Jaya Guru Deva. Do you follow his instructions? Jaya Guru Deva. So, you know, that's better than nothing, I suppose, but that's not going to really help. I thank you very much.
Thank you.
Jai. All glories to all of the Vaishnava devotees of the Lord.